internally we have that conflict of being able to convey value that it's not exactly equal to the time. There are multiple components to the professional input that goes into it. How do we, you know, how do we still provide that optimal experience to the client where the client feels heard, but also we'll deliver the medicine to the patient who's, in our world, those are two separate entities.
Right. Hey there, I am Dr. Jason Bellara, and this is the Know Your Why podcast, where we explore the why behind success. Every week, I meet with real estate investors, veterinary entrepreneurs, mindset coaches, authors, and fitness professionals to uncover their why and how it drives them on the winding road to success. What is your why?
This is a funny thing that has like struck me lately. So when I was, this was before I went to vet school, I worked at a practice and the vet I worked for, I mean, this was like, 2000 probably, like a long time ago. I worked for a vet and he said, this was, so decades ago, said, no vet should make less than 300,000. He said that to me then. And I was like at that time, that amount of money was like literally like Scrooge McDuck. Like that was so much money to me at the time. I was like, that's insane, but that sounds amazing. Like I at the time I was a tech, like I was like, sure, I would be happy with that. And what's why that comes up in my mind a lot is we, you know, we talk to investors for our fund. And with our fund, because of the SEC regulations, the investors have to be accredited. And a lot of people I find don't know what accredited means. But one of the easy things is it's an income, you know, sort of baseline. And so as a single person, you have to make $250,000 a year. As a married couple, you have to make $300,000 a year. And so one thing that blows me away is I'm finding out that there are vets that are not accredited. And I'm like, you're a doctor. You likely have several hundred thousand dollars of school loans. Like you should be making that much, like unless you're working part-time or something like that, like you should be able to be accredited because you deserve it, not because you're greedy or like only money driven or what. You should be able to be at that level of income as a doctor. And I see things like people are taking jobs and stuff like that. They're looking at contracts and I'm like, you don't have to take that job. Like understand your value, right? So in the veterinary world right now, every single hospital is short-staffed. Every single hospital is short-staffed. That's with veterinarians and that's technicians. I would challenge you to tell me one that's not. If someone can come to me, my practice is perfectly staffed. Great. You're in a position that most people are not. You are in the driver's seat. Take a job that values you. Even if you're not going to, this is like outside of practice ownership, like take a job that values you as a technician, as a veterinarian, as a front office staff, like take a job that values you. It doesn't mean that you have to take the most salary that you can possibly make, but you should consider the entire benefits package and you have to look. People ask me all the time about contract negotiations and things like that. And they're like, what do you think about this? And I'm like, well, I can tell you if something in that contract is just terrible, like just something you shouldn't take at all. But ultimately, every contract negotiation is a give and take, and you have to decide what is important to you. And these are things that practices will say, and I have fallen for this. Oh, we pay all our specialists this month. Nope. I'm not negotiating for anybody else. I'm negotiating for me. So if you're going to tell me that my value is exactly the same as every other doctor in the hospital, I don't believe that. Like, that's not true. But also, like, I'm at a point in my career where I can say that. And I've been doing it for a long time. What is happening, what I see, and this is outside of, you know, sort of the practice owner space, is I see a lot of younger vets, a lot of new grads. They don't see the value in themselves, and so they take whatever job, and then they hate it, and then they quit, and they go do only relief. Right? That seems to be where, like, a lot of people are going to that sort of, you know, part-time or relief only. It's great, but you know how you could stop? Like, that's a problem for the practices, because then they don't have any dedicated staff. It might be good for that employee, because they don't, but like, isn't there something where you could make it a good place for people to work that they want to work full time? Like, it's just, I just feel like what's happening now is unsustainable on the employee side, and also on the practice ownership side. I don't know that I know all the answers, but I know if we don't talk about it and we don't think about it, it's just going to keep getting worse, and people are going to continue to leave the profession.
Right. And I've had practice owners ask, and I've also speculated myself, with wages that have gone up significantly over the past years, both on the support team as well as the veterinarians. Like, how is this going to be sustainable? You know, or the comment is, well, now I need to allocate 50% of my revenue to wages. And I said, well, that's only if you're going to do the same thing over again, but you're just paying your people more. Like, just like technology is evolving, like, the way we practice medicine should be evolving, the way we optimize our team and how we find ways to improve our workflow should be improving. So if the prospect of paying your veterinarian over $200,000 a year is daunting, then I would challenge you to, as the practice owner or the practice manager that's involved in those salary negotiations, I would challenge them to say, well, maybe it's that your perspective is that they're going to continue to do exactly what they used to do, and you are not going to expect anything different. Versus, hey, what's going to happen is there are components of AI that's coming into our field. You know, there are more technology for us to leverage that will automate a lot of tedious processes for us and reduce, like, manpower and manual labor hours, so that we can allocate those same amount of time increments to doing other things or other services that is going to be that much more valuable to the client intrinsically, but also valuable to us from a profitability standpoint. So yes, that becomes that the veterinarian that can now be, like, they should be compensated at 200 plus K, you know, and same thing with your RVTs, you know, it kind of saddens me to think that, you know, just 10 years ago, a lot of RVTs, including those within my own practices, were well below $20 an hour.
Yeah.
Now it's like, that's laughable, right?
Well,
so we're slowly catching up.
Right. And
but I think there's more to do.
For sure, there's more to do, and it has to come from multiple different angles, right? You're spot on that, like, some of it's going to be streamlining processes and you know, sort of, but and make no mistake, I don't think that people should just get paid, you know, more money just because. You have to earn it. You have to provide the value as well. But I'll tell you what, like, on the technician front, like, in my veterinary practice, my techs will never leave me because they're not paid enough. Like, I will find the right techs, because the right tech can do twice as much as the wrong tech, and you won't have to pay them twice as much. And it's just like, and they can do it not because they're just going crazy. It's because they're just good at their job and efficient. And it, like, there's this a ton. That was one of the biggest things when I left practice, like when I left my W-2 job, I was just struck more and more and more by the inefficiencies of how things were run. And I'm just like, you don't, like, I don't know. Here's a good example. During COVID, there was obviously a lot of disruption to all industries, but in the veterinary world, I think a lot of people left, but you also just had, like, navigating that whole, like, no clients in the building, that sort of thing. But the insistence on some of the emergency practices to continue to stay open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, despite not having the staff to stay open those hours. Instead of looking at, okay, look, we're in Los Angeles. There's a lot of veterinary practices. There's a lot of 24-hour veterinary practices. Mm-hmm. What if you keep your hospital open for the number of hours that you can actually staff it appropriately? And this other hospital keeps it open for the number of hours, and they're like 8 miles apart. Guess what? If one's not open on Tuesday night at 2 a.m., someone could go 8 miles to the other one. Like, it just doesn't, but there's just things that just don't make any sense. And you just have to, I mean, also, like, if you're looking at paying your staff more, whether it's veterinary or technician staff, and you're like, now my payroll is 50%, well, you're probably not charging enough. Like that, like, or you're not capturing your charges or whatever it is. Like, you have to look at all different avenues of, and this is where what you're so good at, what, you know, when we talked that first time, which just like blew my mind. You're like talking about how this all ties in together, and people don't have that knowledge at all. And like, these practices need someone like you to come in and say, look, these are the things you actually have to look at. Like, mm-hmm. I worked at a practice once that had a woman who, like, her sole job basically was to make sure all the appropriate charges were captured, that people weren't giving away services. Right. She more than paid her salary just having that job. And I would never own a practice without someone doing that, because like we said, like, we all do it. We all do it in the field. We're like, I'll just do this for free here right now.
Exactly.
And it's like,
what's that extra injection? You know, I'm just going to get it in, and it's better for the patient. Yeah. And you, like, you know, it's going to take me 5 seconds.
Right. Just take that x-ray. Don't charge. It's digital.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost anything. I was like, well, it costs three people in there wrestling with that dog to get the x-ray. And then someone has to interpret the x-ray. And it's like, you paid for that equipment to have digital x-ray. Like, it's just like, it does it, you know, there's not like a little,
if us as practitioners and as medical support team, we find value for us to deliver the care, the medicine, in that extra bit of medication, that additional imaging view, that one more diagnostic value.
Yeah.
Then, like, there's your answer. Like, if you didn't need it, you wouldn't have asked for it. And you should be able to send that patient out the door without having it. But because you want it, because we want to know that additional piece of information, we think that this is going to be very adaptive to the patient's, you know, care and recovery. Then you have to monetize it. It's the translating that value over. If we don't believe it, it's going to be that much harder for us to translate that value over to the client, who has to be the person that ends up paying for it. So yeah, I think the team, we have a lot of our own psychology to deal with.
Yeah.
And then for us to have to engage with our own biases, and then engage with the public who brings us their pet for us to take care of. Like, that's a lot of leaps that none of us got any type of academic training, whether you went to vet school or technician school or took some awesome, like, assistant, you know, credentialing program through your VMB. These are hard things to do. Can't fix all of that other stuff. I've got some awesome colleagues that deal with that part of life. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an overnight thing. There's a lot that has to happen, but the reality is, if we don't talk about it and we don't try to fix it, it doesn't get better. And again, just to be clear, like, I am not advocating that vets or vet technicians or whatever should just make more money just because, right? Like, I am very much a, not the right word is, but I believe in being paid for performance and value and that sort of thing. If you're taking crappy x-rays, you shouldn't charge for them. you should learn how to take good x-rays and then charge appropriately for them. Like that, I use that example because I get sent crappy x-rays all the time. Like people that, and I was like, my techs have actually created videos, put them on our Instagram page to say like, this is how you take a TPLO x-ray. Like it's not that hard. Like it's just a matter of, I think you should provide the very best service, but then you should charge for providing the very best service. That's really what I believe. So,
exactly.
I'm going to have you come back again another time, but I want to at least get to ask you the questions I ask every guest, Grace. And so the first one, name of the show is Know Your Why. So what is your why? What's exciting and driving you at this point?
I think it still comes back down to financial security for myself, you know, having control over my own destiny. So I've said that a couple of times to various audiences, and I think 50% of the time the reaction is, ooh, right? Because that's like, ooh, that's really uncomfortable. That sounds really greedy. And then I go, well, if I take care of myself, then I don't need somebody else to take care of me. And that, you know, that may be not worrying about my young child who is now, you know, only 10, but when she is 20, 30, 40, she doesn't have to financially take care of me because I've taken care of myself for myself and for her. And then also the more that I focus on my financial security means that I'm able to promote others to say, hey, this is, it's important to you. You know, it's important to our practice. It's important to our business. Like, let's all be secure so that we've got this one less thing to worry about, you know, so that we have more energy to do all the other good things.
Right. And it just goes back to, you know, kind of that whole valuing yourself, being, realizing like what you can do if you are financially secure yourself, what you can do. And, you know, how about, I mean, you could help animals that don't have, if that's what you want to be, you want to be completely altruistic. You can help animals. There's plenty of animals out there that need help that maybe don't have owners. Well, guess what? If you're set already,
yep,
you freed up some of your time and you're financially secure and all that, then you can help whoever you want. And you can
money doesn't buy you happiness, but it does provide you with options. Exactly. And I think that's the ability to have agency over yourself and having control over what choices you want to make.
100%. Tell us something about yourself that isn't common knowledge. I don't know if you want to use what you put
I will binge, like people talk about Netflix and chill or whatever, but I will binge like these random sports documentaries and sport profiles. And like, I am like a pseudo athlete, you know, like I'm way more fit in my head than I'm actually able to be coordinated with my body in real life. But there's just the psychology of being an athlete, whether it's at amateur or professional level. I think how a lot of the concepts in sports about teamsmanship and about how to work together as a group is very fascinating. And I find a lot of relationships with veterinary medicine and with our teams actually. But also it's just that perseverance, you know, it's adapting to change, and it's the grit of being able to be challenged. Maybe you fail. You know, you will always fail at some point for all the other successes that you have, and just being able to persevere and push on and push through. And I think the drive of a lot of athletes is fascinating. It's they have some other motivation to really push themselves, and I think that psychology is really interesting.
Yeah. This could be a whole nother. There's so many things I want to talk about around this, but yeah. I agree. And I think, it is, you know, I say sports are a metaphor for life, and I really, really believe it's true. And I don't know if that's I don't know if that comes from having been, you know, grown up in athletics my whole life, like that, like in a lot of ways, I think sports got me through a lot of hard things. And so I think that's my connection to them in a lot of ways, but I agree. I love the psychology of it, and kind of, it's very fascinating. Did you watch The Dynasty? Have you watched The Dynasty yet?
No, not yet.
The Patriots documentary. I'm from Boston, no. And I'm a Patriots I'm a Patriots season ticket holder. So it's very 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 interesting to me. But it's just like a lot of the. I mean, again, you know, it's, you watch something like that, it's how it gets portrayed. But it was cool. I watched The Last Dance a while back. Like just mm-hmm. like seeing greatness at that level, and it's interesting because there are people that have greatness at that level in other industries, right? Like you could look at like Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, like Mark Zuckerberg, like people in business that have similar levels of greatness, right? They've done great things in a different space, but it just doesn't get recorded and televised like sports do, right? Yeah. So we see the Michael Jordan, the Kobe Bryant, the Tom Brady's, you know, the Wayne Gretzky's, like all of these people, and you said it, like they just they're different. They're just different.
Yeah.
And the drive and the mindset and the willingness to use failure as fuel is like, it's just great. Like it's just it's like, it's funny. I think like Tom Brady, the Patriots lost to the Giants twice in the Super Bowl. The first time was after a perfect season. And like, I knew all that. I went through it all. I watched all of it. When I watched The Dynasty, it was like reliving the whole thing over again. And it's like, sometimes I've heard like people ask like Tom Brady if like he ever felt like the NFL was scripted or, you know, that kind of thing. And he's like, do you think I would have lost to Peyton Manning twice in the Super Bowl if it was scripted? You know what I mean? Like, or not to Eli Manning. And it's just so like, and it's funny that it's just, you don't know what's going to happen. Right. So it's like living in that world of like, all you can do is prepare your very best. And that's it. You prepare your very best. You do everything you can to, you know, sort of have the outcome that you want. And, you know, whether it's in sports, business, whatever it is, but yeah, sometimes you're going to lose. And guess what? Yeah. You still come back and play again. Like you just, that's it. You just, I love that you said that. And I completely agree. It's like a very fascinating.
And for a lot of individual athletes, when they break down their craft and how they have perfected, you know, and continue to hone that, that element of their psyche and their intuition and their skill sets. I mean, it's fascinating that like randomly watch this piece that really sounded like a sales piece for TaylorMade and their golf clubs, but it was a profile, you know, how they partnered with Tiger Woods, and it was, and he could just tell just by holding, you know, a club, that this club and then this other club supposedly came out of the manufacturing, you know, plant exactly the same. He's like, nope, the weight is off. You know, and there's just these little nuances that they have honed over iterations and practice, and just, and being able to trust a lot of their instinct, but it's not just naked wild instinct. It has been refined over and over again. They test themselves over and over again, and they validate, you know, their intuition. But the part that is probably the most amazing element is how much athletes will just continue to go out there, and it's chance. And they, like you said, all the preparation in the world, and they're just going to go for it, you know, and they may succeed. They may fail today. Who knows? But they won't know until the end of the match, the end of the game, the end of the round. But they just keep going for it, and they continue to strive for excellence. It's a bit intimidating. And I understand why there is a perfectionist syndrome there.
Yeah.
But it is truly, 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 a very fascinating way to be able to leverage off of that level of focus and drive and ambition, and just perseverance, you know. And I think those are some of the elements where I'm like, yes, like I need to be reminded, like I can overcome difficult things.
Yeah. Yeah. And there, Michael Jordan has a quote that he says, I never lost. I just ran out of time. And it like that, when I heard that the first, I think it was maybe when I was actually watching The Last Dance, but like that just, it still gives me chills now. Like it just really shook me. Cause it was like, if you take that piece, right, and you equate it to sports, every sporting event has a time frame, right? Maybe not baseball sort of, but like baseball's a little weird, I think, but you have, you know, football, hockey, basketball, they have soccer, you know, there's a defined period of time, right? That at the end of that time, whatever the score is, there's a winner. But if you then take that philosophy and you bring it into life and business, we don't have a time frame. Your business doesn't end after four quarters, right? Like you just keep going. The Patriots were down 28-3 in the Super Bowl into the third quarter, and they won. I was there. That's the one I've been to. I have seen it happen in real life. I was basically in tears up until they started turning it around. Like it's, but our lives aren't that. Like that's the great thing. Like our lives, our businesses. You don't have to win in 1 year. You don't have to win in 2 years. But you have to look at trying to win until you do, right? And then you have to keep trying to win, because that's you win in business and life and stuff by continuing to play. That's it. Like that's how, you know. So it's just kind of, those concepts are very, very compelling to me as well. So that's great. When people hear this and they want to reach out to you, what's the best way?
Find me on LinkedIn. It's where I look for other like-minded people, and also for people that make me curious about wanting to know more about their story and their journey. I love seeing the LinkedIn posts that are a little bit more dynamic, more than just, hey, I'm at the vendor booth.
Right.
give me a little bit more substance, but also just, it's such a great way to connect to various people in our industry and outside of our industry. And I pull from all sorts of walks of life so that I can bring a lot of good value to, you know, back to veterinary medicine, to our teams. Awesome. So find me on LinkedIn.
Yeah. We'll put the link in the show notes. Last question for you, Grace. What advice would you give to someone who wants to get started? And I'll let you take that in whatever direction you want.
Yeah. You
know, whether that's in veterinary medicine practice or just getting their finances together, honestly, any direction you want to take it, but someone who hears this and they're like, okay, well, that's like, cool. What like she's I, doing. Like, what do I do?
like I had proposed for, you know, the title for this session is, you know, curiosity did not kill that cat. So there is so many things to ask questions about. And trust me, it is really annoying to be on the receiving end when it's your child that's asking endless questions. But then I realized, well, okay, that's where she's getting it from, because I'm infinitely curious. You know, I want to know how something, you know, there are moments when I want to know how something is made. You know, how did this journey happen? You know, where are you going next? You know, so I think whatever it is that you are curious about, it's not a lifetime commitment. Just explore it for as long as it is interesting to you. So for me, it's a lot of numbers, but there's a point where I go, I'm glazed over. You know, forensic auditing, that's, go ahead, somebody else run that show. But some people love it, right? So whatever it is that you want to know more about, ask. And I think we're also in a social cultural stage where not only the information is accessible, right? Internet is well populated with good, yeah, mediocre to bad resources, but the information is there, but also the people is there. Like, how many times are you able to reach across, especially through a platform like LinkedIn, to somebody that lives clear across the country, if not in another country, and be able to say, I think I have an interest that you may be an expert in, or you just, you know, I see a lot of posts from you about that I'm curious about. I find the most random people to connect with on LinkedIn, and I'm always thankful when they take the time to answer back, and then even to say, hey, yeah, you want to chat some more and rumble about this topic, you know, and explore it, then I'm all for it. You never know how you're going to enrich somebody else's life as well as they enrich yours. So
yeah,
keep on asking questions.
Could not agree more. I love, it is sometimes frustrating when the kids ask questions, but I learned this from training residents. Being like, asking questions is great. Being asked questions might actually be better, in the sense that it forces you to understand. If you get past the irritation and I don't believe that there are no dumb questions. I think there are some maybe not dumb questions, inappropriately timed or placed questions, but I think that most of the time, people asking questions, asking what, you know, about whatever it is, like asking intelligent questions and wanting to learn and be curious, I love it because it makes me think about why am I really doing this? Or what am I doing? Like, I love to think about everything I do, and is it the right way? Can I do this a better way? And I think that, like, the worst answer to a question is because that's how we do it. Like, that nothing frustrates me more than hearing that as an answer to a question. Like, even if I hear someone else ask that, like, that's how we do it. Well, okay, well, if that was how we did everything, we'd still be living in the Stone Ages. Like, it doesn't, you know, the reason why technology advances and you know, there are improvements to our lives is because someone said, is there a better or different way to do this? And it's just, and if you don't ask those questions, we never get those results. So I love that concept. I think it's really applicable to all, you know, veterinary community or otherwise. I think it's just applicable to the people in general. So Grace, thank you very, very much for coming on today. I've really enjoyed this discussion. I think people are going to love it. So thank you for taking the time out. I appreciate it very, very much.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And
a good one.
Folks listening, I know you're going to love this episode. Please like, rate, and review the show so we can get more great guests like Grace. And thank you all for listening.
Hey there. I am Dr. Jason Ballara, and this is the Know Your Why podcast, where we explore the why behind success. Every week, I meet with real estate investors, veterinary entrepreneurs, mindset coaches, authors, and fitness professionals to uncover their why and how it drives them on the winding road to success. What is your why?